I'm always causing trouble. His speech slurred as the drug took hold. Ikahi swam almost underneath the drowsy pilot and sighed a brief, soft lullaby. Dream defender, dream of those who love you and bless your courage. Chapter 85. Jillian.
You're saying these crank were the last sophants to have license to the planet Kithrop 100 million years ago?
Correct, the Nis machine replied. They were savagely abused by their patrons, mutated far beyond the degree allowed by the codes. According to the Thenanin battleship's library, it caused quite a scandal at the time. In compensation, the Karank were released from their indenture as clients and granted a world suited to their needs, one with low potential for developing pre-sentience. Water worlds make good retirement homes for that reason. Few pre-sophants ever arise on such planets. The Kikwi seem to be an exception.
Jillian paced the sloping ceiling of the lopsided room. An occasional clanking, transmitted by the metal walls, told of the final fittings being made to secure Streaker into the Trojan Seahorse.
You aren't saying the Kikwi have anything to do with these ancient...
No, they appear to be a genuine find, and a major reason why you should endeavor to escape this trap and return to Earth with what you have learned.
Jillian smiled ironically.
Thanks, we'll do our best. So, what was done to the Karank?
She did her best with the double glottal stop.
To make them want to hide away on Kithrop, never to associate with galactic culture again.
The Nis explained.
In their pre-sentient form, they were mole-like creatures on a metal-rich world like this one. They had carbon-oxygen metabolisms, such as yours, but they were excellent diggers.
Let me guess, they were bred as miners to extract ores on metal-poor worlds.
It would be cheaper to import and breed Karank diggers than ship large quantities of metals across interstellar space.
A very good guess, Dr. Baskin. The client Karank were indeed transformed into miners, and in the process converted to a metabolism extracting energy directly from radioactives. Their patrons thought it would help serve as an incentive.
Jillian whistled.
Such a drastic shift in their structure couldn't have been successful. If me, they must have suffered.
It was a perversion, the Nis agreed. When it was discovered, the Karank were freed and offered recompense. But after a few millennia trying to adapt to standard starfaring life, they chose to retire to Kithrop. This planet was ceded them for the duration of their race. No one expected them to survive for long. Instead of dying out, however, they seem to have continued to modify themselves on their own. They appear to have adopted a lifestyle unique in known space.
Jillian brought together the threads of the earlier part of the conversation and made an inference. Her eyes widened.
You mean to tell me the metal mounds are larvae of an intelligent life form which dwells in the crust of this planet?
Yes. I might have surmised this from the latest data sent by Dr. Denny Sudman, but Krydike had leapt to the conclusion before we even heard from her. That is why he came to see me, to get confirmation of his hypothesis.
Sounds, voices,
Jillian whispered.
They're crank.
An acceptable tentative deduction,
the nurse approved.
It would have been the discovery of the century, were it not for the other things you've already turned up on this expedition. I believe you humans have an old expression in English. It doesn't rain, but it pours. It's quaint, but apropos.
Jillian wasn't listening.
The bombs!
She slapped her forehead.
I beg your pardon?
I let Charlie Dart steal some low-yield bombs from our armory. I knew Takata Jim would confiscate them and begin transforming them into fuel. It was part of a plan I had cooked up, but...
You assumed Takata Jim would confiscate all of the bombs?
Yes. I was going to call him up and tip him off if he overlooked them, but he was quite efficient and discovered them right away. I had to lie to Toshio about it, but that couldn't be helped.
If all went according to plan, I do not see the problem.
The problem is that Takata Jim may not have seized all of the bombs. It never occurred to me that Charlie could harm living Sophants if he still had one. Now, though, I've got to get in touch with Toshio at once.
Can it wait a few minutes? Takata Jim probably was thorough, and there is another matter I wish to discuss with you.
No, you don't understand. Toshio's about to sabotage his comm set. It's part of my plan. If there's even a chance Charlie's got a bomb, we have to find out quickly.
The holo patterns were agitated.
I'll make the connection at once,
the NIST announced.
It will take me a few moments to worm through Streaker's comm system without being detected. Stand by.
Jillian paced the sloping floor, hoping they would be in time. Chapter 86 Toshio. Toshio finished the rewiring, slapped the cover over the transmitter on Thomas Orley's sled, and spread a light smear of mud on the plate to make it seem long unopened. Then he unhitched the monofilament line from the unit, tied a small red marker ribbon to the end, and let the almost invisible fiber drift down into the depths. Now he was out of touch with Streaker. It made him feel more alone than ever, even lonelier than when Denny and Stoud had departed early in the morning. He hoped Takata Jim would follow orders and wait here until Streaker left. If he did, Jillian would call down as they blasted away and warn him of the modifications that had been made to the longboat and this transmitter. But what if Takata Jim were indeed a traitor? What if he took off early? Charles Dart would probably be aboard then, as well as Ignacio Metz, 3 Stenos, and perhaps 3 or 4 Kikui. Toshio wished none of them harm. It was an agonizing choice. He looked up and saw Charles Dart happily muttering to himself as he played with his new robot. Toshio shook his head, glad that the chimp at least was happy. He slid into the water and swam over to his own sled. He had jettisoned its tiny radio an hour ago. He strapped himself in and turned on the motors. He still had to make one more splice below the island. The old robot, the damaged probe Charles Dart had abandoned down near the bottom of the drill tree shaft, had one last customer. Crydike, hanging around Streaker's old site, still wanted to talk to Sout's voices. Toshio figured he owed the captain the favor, even if he did feel like he was humoring a delusion. As the sled sank, Toshio thought about the rest of his job here, the things he might have to do before he could leave. "Let Tom Orley be waiting for me when I come back up," he wished fervently. That would solve everything. Let Mr. Orley be finished with his job up in the north, and land up there while I'm below. Toshio smiled ironically. And while you're at it, Ifni, why not throw in a giant fleet of good guys to clear the skies of baddies,
He descended down the narrow shaft into the gloom. Chapter 87. Jillian.
Drat! Triple hell! The line's dead. Toshio's already cut it.
Don't be overly alarmed,
the Nis spoke reassuringly.
It is quite likely that Takata Jim confiscated all of the bombs. Did not Midshipman Iwashika report that he saw several being dismantled for fuel, as you expected?
Yes, and I told him not to worry about it, but it never occurred to me to ask him to count them. I was caught up in the minutiae of moving the ship, and I didn't think Charlie would do any real harm, even if by some chance he managed to keep one.
Now, of course, we know better.
Jillian looked up, wondering if the Timbrimey machine was being tactful or obliquely sarcastic.
Well, he said, what's done is done. Whatever happens can't affect us here. I just hope we don't add a crime against a sentient race to our dubious record on this voyage.
She sighed.
Now, will you tell me again how all this is going to become some sort of legend?
Chapter 88. Toshio. The connection was made. Now Kraidaiki could listen to the underground sounds to his heart's content. Toshio let the monofilament drop into the mud. He emptied ballast, and the sled rose in a spiral toward the drill tree shaft. When he surfaced, Toshio knew at once that something had changed. The second sled, the one belonging to Tom Orley, had been dragged up the steep embankment and lay on the sward to the south of the pool. Wires dangled from an open section in the control panel. Charles Dart squatted by the water's edge. The chimp leaned forward with his finger to his lips. Toshio cut the motors and loosened his straps. He sat up and looked about the clearing, but saw only the waving forest fronds. Charlie said in a guttural whisper,
I think Takata Jim and Metz are planning to take off soon, Toshio, with or without me.
Dart looked confused, as if dazed by the foolishness of the idea. Toshio kept his expression guarded.
What makes you think that, Dr. Dart?
As soon as you went down, two of Takata Jim's Stenos came to take that sled's radio. Also, when you were below, they tested the engines. They sounded kind of ragged at first, but they're working on them now. I think now they don't even care if you report back anymore.
Toshio heard a soft growling sound to the south, a low whine that rose and fell unevenly. A rustle of movement to the north caught his eye. He saw Ignacio Metz hurrying southward down the forest trail, carrying bundles of records. Behind him trooped four sturdy Kikwi volunteers from the village. Their air sacs were puffed up proudly, but they obviously did not like approaching the rough engine noises. They carried crude bundles in front of them. From the foliage, several dozen pairs of wide eyes watched the procession nervously. Toshio listened to the sound of the engines and wondered how much time was left. Takata Jim had finished recycling the bombs sooner than expected. Perhaps they had underestimated the Dolphin Lieutenant. How much else had he jury-rigged to make the longboat serviceable ahead of schedule?
Should I try to delay their takeoff? If I stay any longer, it's unlikely I'd ever reach Streaker in time.
What about you, Dr. Dart? Are you ready to finish up and hop aboard when Takata Jim calls? Dart glanced to his console. He shook his head.
I need another 6 hours,
he grumbled.
Maybe we've got a common interest in delaying the longboat taking off. You got any ideas?
Toshio considered. Well, this is it, isn't it? This is where you decide. Leave now if you plan to go at all. Toshio exhaled deeply.
Ah, well. If I think of a way to delay them for a while, Dr. Dart, will you help me? It may be a little risky.
Dart shrugged.
All I'm doing right now is waiting for my bot to dig into the crust to bury an instrument. I'm free until then. What do I have to do?
Toshio unhooked the monofilament feeder coil from his sled and cut the free end.
Well, for starters, I think we'll need someone to climb some trees.
Charlie grimaced.
Stereotypes,
he muttered to himself.
All the time getting trapped by stereotypes.
This ends side 2 of cassette 10.